Good morning. This is At Issue on WGXC Acra, 90.7 on your radio dial. I'm Debbie Mayer, the host of At Issue, and I'm here in the studio in Hudson with Ken Golden, who's running for DA in Columbia County. Say hello, Ken.
Good morning.
Good morning, Ken. And also with us is Peter Bujano, who is the chair of the Columbia County Democrat Committee.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Peter. Okay, this is the DA show on WGXC Acra for Columbia County. And so I'm going to ask Ken Golden to start for us and just briefly give us his professional background. Ken's been in the legal field for a long time. And Ken, you live in Valencia or the town of Kinderhook?
I lived in the town of Kinderhook.
Okay. And then take it from there. What have you been doing for the last 20 or 30 or 40 years?
Well, that's going to take quite a while.
But yeah, well, briefly. You've got at least five minutes. Yeah.
For at least the last 35 years or so.
Okay.
I've been a practicing attorney. I started out in Albany with a law firm concentrating mostly on litigation and principally in cases involving defense of medical malpractice, products liability, municipal liability, and very complex cases. And then about 20 years ago, my wife and I moved our family down here to Columbia County, where I started with the district attorney's office.
Yes.
And I became an assistant district attorney, where I worked for about 6.5 years under Beth Cozzolino, who was the elected district attorney at the time. And I served in that capacity until about 2004, when I had an opportunity to work as a senior attorney with New York State with two different agencies. And there I handled different regulations relating to businesses, administrative hearings, proceedings, opinions by the Commissioner of Labor, for example, and writing opinions for the Secretary of State. So that took up most of my time until about 2 years or ago or so, when I started to do more work with the American Bar Association, principally as a volunteer attorney, working to help veterans process their disability claims, because there had been such a backlog and the paperwork had become so cumbersome that the American Bar Association was looking for volunteer attorneys to help with these cases. So I've been involved with that primarily for the last 2 years, and also with the American Bar Association program to help people who have received life sentences for drug offenses but are now qualify for reduced sentences or clemency because the laws have changed. In the last several years. We've seen a change in many of our laws regarding the imprisonment of people who were convicted under the old laws. So I've been helping them with that process and getting reduced sentences or clemency if that's applicable. And then, you know, a few months ago, I was asked to consider running for the Office of District Attorney, and that's why I'm here today.
Right. And so you did decide to run for the Office of District Attorney. And just briefly, what compelled you to do that? Why do you want this job?
Well, I think it's a very important job in in the sense that the Office of the District Attorney really is the principal prosecutor for the entire county.
Okay.
And as a prosecutor, you have the responsibility to represent the interests of the people of the county. And that's my main goal, is I want to see that the voices of all the people in the county are heard. And in order to do that, we have to establish the trust that people have in our criminal justice system. And that means maintaining the independence of our local courts, making sure that law enforcement agencies are able to do the work that they were either appointed or hired to do, and that the agencies that serve the public are able to do the jobs that they've been asked to do. And that may involve things like victims advocacy programs. It may be counseling, may be drug treatment, or a variety of other things that mm-hmm. that serve the interests of the people.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let me just. Sorry, no dead air. Like all candidates, Ken has a palm card, and with lots of information and ideas on it. And we're going to talk about some of these down here. If it says, if elected, Ken will initially focus on a number of key and very important areas of criminal justice where inadequacies or injustices exist. And there is a list of three things, and I'd like to ask Ken to elaborate. You know, a palm card is bullet points, but we have some time here today on At Issue, WGXC, ACRA 90.7. So I'm going to ask Ken Golden to elaborate on some of the bullet points of his palm card. And Ken, you can kind of take it in what order you'd like.
Sure. I think one of the most important things to realize is that the criminal justice system is changing. Mm-hmm. Years ago, we thought that it was just enough to arrest the people who commit the crimes, put them in jail, and that was pretty much the end of it. Mm-hmm. But that's mm-hmm. not the way the criminal justice system works. We know now, for example, that many people who are incarcerated, who don't receive counseling or treatment or some sort of intervention, will become repeat offenders. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the main objectives of the current trend in criminal justice, is to see that people who do violate the law and are incarcerated don't become repeat offenders. So there are a number of programs that are available that we need to focus on in order to mm-hmm. see that doesn't occur. Drug offenders, for example. Many drug offenders are convicted simply because they possess the drugs. Mm-hmm. And if their problem is addiction, that's something that we need to deal with. Mm-hmm. We need to find out what counseling they may need, what treatment they may need, so that they don't remain addicted to narcotics. Mm-hmm. But we also need to go after the drug sellers. Mm-hmm. And those are the people who are most likely to commit violent crimes, mm-hmm. who may have guns that they use in connection with their drug trafficking. And that's another area where we need to mm-hmm. to concentrate, to see that these people are taken off the streets, mm-hmm. that they aren't operating openly within our local communities, whether it's the city of Hudson or even in the outlying towns. Because many of the people have told me, as I've talked to them throughout the campaign, that they see things like heroin, for example, mm-hmm. On the school buses or on the
really?
School grounds. And that's God. That's something that should not occur.
No. I was going to ask you, I was thinking, well, is this being done now in Columbia County? Is this being addressed now in Columbia County?
I think it seems to come in spurts. Mm-hmm. You know, as the topics become more current, we have an awareness that something needs to be done, and then we see some arrests that occur, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. it needs to be a continuous ongoing program mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. where we are looking for these sellers of narcotics and trying to find where they're concentrating their sales and take them off the streets. It's not something that can be done just on a periodic basis. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Needs to be done continuously.
Right. Okay.
And I think what we've seen in the last few years is that there's been kind of a sporadic approach to it. In different occasions.
Mm-hmm.
The Office of the District Attorney's records, for example, show that in 2012 there were only something like three convictions for the sale of narcotics.
Uh-huh.
And then there was a significant drug bust in 2013
uh-huh.
that resulted in an additional 18, but then it went down again to about four convictions in 2014 and, mm-hmm. and none in 2015. And mm-hmm. that's surprising for an area where mm-hmm. we know that we have to be continually aware of investigating and arresting these people and taking them off the streets.
Okay, yes. Drugs are important. What else? What other area do you want to tackle? And well, how would you do it?
One of the areas that that is constantly changing and will be changing in the future is the area of juvenile justice.
Mm,
we have seen, for
That's
example, it's very important. Mm-hmm. There are going to be some changes as the state moves forward with its proposed legislation. One of the things that we have seen here in Columbia County and actually across the state and across the nation is that many juveniles are simply jailed and not offered any counseling, not offered job opportunities, training, whatever it takes to keep them from preventing crimes again and getting involved in a system where they just constantly are in and out of jail or the criminal justice system. So that's something we need to address. We need to address
Definitely.
How these young people can be rehabilitated, trained, educated, so that they don't become habitual criminals. And that's a very important program. And in addition to that, there are other programs that are equally important that have been eliminated in the last few years.
What are the ones that have been eliminated?
Well, one of them is the domestic violence program. Mm-hmm. It's being handled by a private agency now, but there is no coordinated response from the prosecutor's office. When I was an assistant district attorney, we were able to obtain grants that fully funded many of these programs, and it didn't cost the taxpayers of the county a dime. Those are programs that we need to institute.
Do you think those grants are still available?
They are still available, both from the federal government and from the state. And also programs that advocate for victims advocacy programs. That was another program that was eliminated that we need to reinstitute, because these are programs that touch the lives of everyday citizens.
Yes.
You know, once a crime is committed, there are consequences to the victims, to the families, that need to be addressed. Many people, particularly in cases of domestic violence, need some sort of assistance from our either the agencies that are out there, mental health, counseling, family services, child advocacy programs, whatever. But these are things that have not been...
I was going to say, and the DA's office can kind of coordinate things, do you think?
Yes, they can.
Okay.
Actually, they can.
Okay.
That's one of the things that we did way back in 2001.
When you were working in the DA's office.
When I was working in the DA's office, we were able to coordinate the programs, not only throughout the county, but actually with across to Greene County, where we worked with them and their programs to provide assistance to victims. So that's something that we really need to reinstitute here in Columbia County.
Definitely. Okay, I'm talking to Ken Golden, who's running for Columbia County DA. And we're here with Peter Bujano of Kinderhook, who hasn't said a word. Peter, would you like to chime in here?
Sure. Would you like me to talk about the Delahunt case?
Yeah, why don't you start that?
All right. I very much appreciate and support what Ken Golden is talking about here. Ken seems to be more of a citizen-centric and taking a citizen-centric approach to things, reinstating things that have gone missing. And there was a case recently that I'd like to address and try to simplify. It relates to Judge Dave Delahunt, the Kinderhook Town and Village Justice, and the district attorney. And there's been much written about it, and the writings have been somewhat confusing because the case itself is somewhat confusing.
Yes.
And I wanted to just go through it and try to boil it down and how it began and what makes it frivolous as the Supreme Court decided.
Of New York State, the Supreme Court of New York State.
So there was a decision that came down in February 2015 from the Supreme Court Appellate Division, 3rd Judicial Department. And it relates to a request by the district attorney for the transcripts and the recordings of a particular day of court hearing in the village of Kinderhook. And the judge did not deny that request. He simply said to the district attorney that there needed to be some time so that they could review the recordings and in accordance with the criminal procedures law, and that they couldn't reveal all of the information because some of it was required to be maintained private. And so that request came, and it was going to take some time because the night of the request was there were 88 matters on the docket to be heard.
Wow. So did they do that in one night?
They did 88 cases in one night.
Wow.
And so the district attorney, for some specific reason, wanted that that evening's, that was a June 4th, I believe it was, the Village of Kinderhook court session.
Uh-huh.
So Judge Delahunt said, yes, well, it'll take us some time, and he asked his court clerk to go ahead and start, you know, looking through the document and getting it to a transcriptionist. So some time went along, and in December of 2012, the documents were still being prepared, and the district attorney filed a lawsuit to compel the transcript and release of the transcript and the recordings of the proceedings. Now, what makes it a little bit interesting, and we'll touch on the frivolous nature of this in a minute, but what makes it interesting is the fact that the papers were served upon Judge Delahunt on December 24th and returnable on December 26th.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very short time period to respond to something in order to have the judge get some representation, legal representation,
right,
and to put the response together is a very short time. Typically, there's a 20 or 30 day period of time that's allowed. Judge Delahunt immediately responded to Judge Doyle at the time saying he needed some more time, and that was denied. So that went on. And then what was discovered during that, the issue that makes this case interesting is that the court order compelling Judge Delahunt to provide those documents was amended because the original filing appears to have only included the town of his position as town of Kinderhook justice,
right,
rather than Kinderhook Village justice.
Mm-hmm.
So a court order was amended, which is not legal, is not proper. The original document was amended to include, at that point, the village justice.
Because that's what they were interested in originally.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That was the court where the information was being requested initially, and so that went on. So those papers were filed. The decision, the response was due the 26th. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Judge Delahunt was not able to do that. He asked for the extension. That didn't happen. The other interesting component of this is that the village attorney for the Village of Kinderhook is also the county attorney, so the village attorney had to recuse himself.
Right.
And the town of Kinderhook, attorney for the town of Kinderhook is also an employee at that time of the county, had to recuse himself.
Mm-hmm.
So Judge Delahunt had to go out and find the legal representation from another source, which he did. He went out and hired an attorney to represent him on behalf of the town and village. So the amended petition that I talked about was amended, was served without court authorization, according to the decision that came down from the appellate division.
Okay.
So it was served without court authorization to add the village of Kinderhook.
Right.
And the district attorney acknowledges this. And basically what I'm saying comes from not my opinion or someone else's opinion or a party's opinion. It comes from the judge's decision.
Okay.
The court's decision.
Mm-hmm.
So just wanted to make that clear. So the DA acknowledged that the papers that were served were altered. He does that to the court in his filings. And he does not admit or deny, though, that he made those alterations. He just says, yes, those documents were altered. And the court basically goes on to say that alteration was startling. It was startling in nature, and the fact that the alteration was done was remarkable.
So the court, quoting the court, it was startling and remarkable?
That's correct.
Okay.
Remarkable timing of the disclosure at the point where it was disclosed. So what makes it a little bit frivolous is the fact that the timing, and more importantly, this goes back before 2012. There was a point in time where the district attorney came before Judge Delahunt, and he had actually made an issue because there had been some disagreement between the two at some point in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a disagreement between the DA and the judge, and the DA sought to compel Judge Delahunt's recusal by filing over 100 motions for recusal against Judge Delahunt because of that previous encounter where there was some disagreement.
In 100 different cases?
100 different cases.
Okay. Uh-huh.
The district attorney tried to have Judge Delahunt removed from those cases.
From the case. Did he succeed?
Actually, those filings went on, and because the district attorney has the authority to do that, they that was part of this lawsuit, and uh-huh. that was part of the issue that happened. And so that makes part of this frivolous, and that the courts allude to the fact that maybe that had, or in matter of fact, Judge Delahunt suggested perhaps maybe that connected to this filing had something to do with the frivolous nature of it.
Uh-huh. But
what also makes it frivolous was the timing, as I mentioned earlier, against Judge Delahunt, December 24th, 26th, a holiday period.
Yes.
For some.
Yeah.
And the fact that altering the court order that was put before two Supreme Court justices.
Right. So the timing, altering the order, and the previous 100 interaction.
Right.
Yeah. We're talking right now to Peter Bajano of Kinderhook, who's the chair of the Columbia County Democrat Committee. This is At Issue on WGXC ACRA 90.7 on your radio dial or streaming 24/7 at WGXC.org. I'm Debbie Mayer, and Peter Bajano is telling us about the Delahunt case, basically. Go ahead, Peter.
Yes. So the court decision basically talked, it made some very strong statements. One mm-hmm. of it, one of the statements appearing in the decision says that it certainly bears significant consideration that, as an elected district attorney, the petitioner, the district attorney, apparent involvement here may be deemed to constitute to a substantial violation of the rules of professional conduct.
Uh-huh.
So there's been this understanding that the case recently was settled, because what happened recently was a few months ago, mm-hmm. the Columbia County Board of Supervisors decided to, well, let me back up. The decision by the Supreme Court said, we decide in favor of Judge Delahunt, and mm-hmm. we move to have hearings on sanctions mm-hmm. In two areas. One, sanctions, again, this is not an agreement. So Judge Delahunt wins the case. Mm-hmm. Back in February, and mm-hmm. between February and a few months ago, there was discussion on an agreement on how we resolve the sanctions. So a sanction is different than a settlement, because a court-ordered sanction is a financial penalty imposed by a judge mm-hmm. on a party for a violation of a court rule or a fine for contempt of court, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, because they determined that the filings were frivolous, they ordered the sanctions. So the value of the sanctions initially was that Judge Delahunt requested sanctions in the amount of his actual legal cost, which at that point were the total of all those costs were $43,000.
Right, that was Judge Delahunt's cost. Yeah, okay.
So
considerable.
So the judge moved to settle or have them agree to sanctions
the appellate court judge, right?
Without going to a hearing. Mm-hmm. And had they gone to a hearing, there were two components to it. The other one was to determine the facts surrounding the accusations or the allegations of a frivolous nature of action. So because the case was settled with the sanctions and the court had an agreement between the parties, between the judge and the DA mm-hmm. of that settlement, they no longer needed to go to the hearing. So they just settled the case and mm-hmm. and they moved forward. That settlement made the cost recovery to the village of Kinderhook and the town of Kinderhook.
Yes. And so they get...
They were made whole for the cost of Dave Delahunt's attorney representing mm-hmm. his interest on behalf of the town and the village.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that part was resolved by an agreement. Had it gone to a hearing, it could have resulted in a different matter. There could have been additional hearings, but both parties decided to complete the issue and complete it earlier so that it wouldn't drag on and make the village and the town whole. But the court in its decision addressed that, as I just stated, that mm-hmm. there might be a substantial violation of the rules of professional conduct. Now, there's a process for for addressing any type of misconduct or behavior or deemed behavior, alleged behavior by any professional attorney, and that's through filing through the Committee on Professional Standards.
Yes.
And that's part of the Supreme Court Appellate Division, and they there's an application, and they review that. So based on what I read in this decision, it makes me feel that perhaps there's been further action taken to carry this further for review, because the court through the hearing process did not do it because it was resolved by the agreement. So so it does say, they do say in their decision, we are sympathetic to this request of sanctions, in particular as to the counsel fees that have been expended and apparently wholly without any sound legal basis or cause. That's in the document. That's in the decision. So there could be additional activity taken here. I just want everyone to understand that this this was not a decision. It was not just a disagreement between a judge and a DA. There was a basis for the filing. The courts saw it that way. They made some heavy statements regarding the activities, the actions taken, and they allude to the fact that there may be additional, again, this is the court saying this, additional review of the actions taken.
Okay, but we don't know if it's before the Committee on Professional Standards.
We don't know that because it's a private matter, and they do not disclose that type of information.
Would they ever give the result of their study, or
they have different they have different actions that they take. There's letters that they send out, letters of reprimand. There's letters, counseling letters. There's
and those presumably would be private.
Those would be private. When it becomes public, it's when they would remove someone from office or disbar or things of that nature. Becomes
that
very public at
public.
That point. But they issue reports regularly and have a website where they find it, where you can find information. It's through the Unified Court System in the, in the Court of New York State Court of Appeals Appellate Division. So we're not sure if that's going on, but based on what we read in this decision, and what makes it frivolous are those actions that were taken. The timing, you know, the timing of the filing, where it falls on a holiday and there's only 2 days to respond, seems to be, in my opinion, more of a mean-spirited type of attempt rather than, you know, if allowing it to go through the regular routine of timing and allowing people
days.
To prepare 20, 30 days. So some of that.
That's interesting. So what, just to try to wind up, what does this mean to the listener, to me, for example?
What happened here is there were, between this and it was another case called the Mossman case that was settled recently. And
appears, that was more money.
That was $115,000, right? Yeah. And there seems to be, that case seemed to have similarities to this. I'm not, I was not aware of the entire case with that, but I'm aware of some of the facts to it, and it appears to be a similar nature where the employee of the county was not provided what he was entitled to in terms of legal representation, acting as a county employee, acting in his duties as county employee. And so he had to go out and litigate and sue for his rights so that he could be made whole for his cost. And responding to that. In the end, the county ended up paying. So my question or what it means to you and the taxpayers of Columbia County is that we've expended here close to $170,000between the two cases. And my question is maybe that, my point would be maybe that money would have been better spent on prosecuting real criminals and going after or promoting different types of programs, as Ken Golden mentioned a little while ago, rather than these types of frivolous litigation. So, you know, looking back at the Delahunt case, you know, did it really need to happen in the first place? Because, you know, the judge was acting, he was acting in accordance with law in responding to a request for transcript of a proceeding, and he didn't act fast enough, and apparently there was this feeling that maybe he was delaying it intentionally, but it takes time, and there were 88 cases, and it had to be done properly.
So that's why it was taking 6 months.
Right, so the question is, did this really have to happen anyway, and what was the purpose of that? And,
yes.
And the other question
one
that
wonders what the purpose was.
Correct. Comes up in the discussion is, What was the information that he was looking for? What was it needed for? You know, in the end, during the proceedings of the Delahunt case, the documents were turned over to the district attorney. That's noted in the document.
Okay, so they were turned over.
So they were finally given to him, but they were, and he then assumed that it was not the information he was looking for because some of the information had to be taken out in accordance with the civil procedures law.
Right.
And so the question really goes back to, did this really need to happen? Could he have waited a little bit longer to get the information that he had requested instead of spending these dollars and going to this extreme in appeals? And then, you know, the other question about the professional standards is, you know, the court mentions that altering documents is a pretty serious offense. And they didn't determine what they were going to do with it, but they just can't leave it open because there was an admission that the document was altered. There was some indication that maybe or maybe not the judge was aware of it, and the courts in the decision, the Delahunt decision, indicated that it did not appear as though the judge, who is Judge Doyle, who has since been removed from the bench for other activities in 2013, I believe.
Really?
It wasn't clear whether the judge was aware of it, and the way it went about was not the proper way to go about it.
Right. Yeah. Okay. We're talking to Peter Bajano about the Judge Delahunt case, and we have Ken Golden here who's running for DA. Ken, do you have any comment on this before we take a break?
Yes. I think the important thing that I've taken away from this case and similar type cases is that we really need to maintain the independence of our courts, and particularly our local courts, our town and village courts, because the courts are ultimately the places where we get an independent, unbiased, non-political decision of disputes, whether it's a criminal case or a civil case. And if in a case like this, where a judge is threatened by a public official, to compel him to do something, and if he doesn't respond in the proper way, then he's subject to a lawsuit, is simply the complete opposite of the way our criminal justice system should work and the way our democracy should work, because we have the most important part of our democracy throughout over 200 years has been that the courts are the independent arbiters of all disputes between public officials and between citizens. And that's something that we have to really work to maintain.
Yes, important. Good, thank you. Okay, we're going to take a little musical break here. I found a song about a DA, and Nev is going to help me put it on. Hang on, it's coming.
District Attorney, show it hard on a man. He will take a woman, man, and leave a calling hand. District Attorney, show it hard on a man. He will take a woman, man, and leave a calling hand. A district attorney, show it hard on a man. He have called a many men to been some distant land. District Attorney, show it hard on a man. He have called a many women to be cold and hand. A district attorney, show it hard on a man. Can't no woman, but he sure will take a woman, man. District attorney, show it hard on a man. He will take a woman, man, and leave her cold and hand. A district attorney, show it hard on a man. He can tell us as well when he gonna take a woman, man. District attorney, show it hard on a man. Well, he take a woman, man, and leave her cold and hand. Tino. Show it hot on a man. He taking me from my woman, called her to love some other man. Dee Spigatano. Show it hot on a man. He wanna take a woman, man, leave her cold and hand.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of WGXC or Wavebond.
Okay, At Issue is back on the air. We had to run the disclaimer again. This is Debbie Mayer, your host. I'm here with Ken Golden, who's running for DA in Columbia County, and with Peter Bujano, who's chair of the Columbia County Democratic Committee, and they're both from the Kinderhook area. So, Peter, are we going to talk some more about cases?
Yeah, just want to mention a few things about when we were out selecting and discussing potential candidates, the possibility of running for district attorney in Columbia County, you know, we looked at some of the backgrounds and what their thoughts were, and you know, what we've come up with and some of the feedback we've gotten from our candidates during that process is that in Columbia County there appears to be some type of selective enforcement. These are the pieces of information that came back to us, and that they were concerned about, you know, certain cases are heard, certain cases aren't heard, and how do you make everything fair and just and bring integrity back and you know, bring character back. And so, you know, we're aware in Columbia County over the last year or so, there's been a number of cases. They've been in the paper. You can read about them. You can look them up. And what we're finding is maybe there's some truth to what we've been hearing, that, you know, why are some cases taken to the full limit of prosecution and others are just not. So we talked to Ken about that, and Ken talks about a fair and equal just system. And maybe Ken wants to address some of what he's heard and just kind of describe some of the things he had mentioned to us during our interview process.
Sure. One of the things that I have found as I've been talking to people throughout the campaign and throughout the county and all the various towns is that there is this feeling among just about everybody I've spoken to that justice is not administered evenly throughout the county, that in many cases it depends upon political party affiliation or who you know or some other connection that is not related to what the prosecution of the case is about. And many people are afraid. That's one of the things that has been somewhat of a surprise to me, but they're afraid to speak out because they might lose their jobs or there might be some sort of retribution. And that's simply not the way our criminal justice system or our system of justice should work. People should be able to speak freely about what their concerns are, about whether they've been treated fairly, and to voice their opinions about not only cases that they're directly involved in, but those that they think have been mishandled. And some of those cases involved what Peter just mentioned is the selective enforcement of selective prosecution of some cases. One case, for example, involved the sexual abuse of a 14-year-old boy in one of the towns. And that case, the defendant was arrested, brought before a judge, but for some reason the case was never prosecuted. And the county court judge, this was a felony, had to take it upon himself to dismiss the case because the prosecutor decided not to proceed with it. He was never given an answer as to why that was the case. And there have been other examples of this.
So the case is closed then without a trial?
That's correct. That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay,
simply disposed of. It was dismissed by the judge.
Right, it's dismissed by the judge.
Because there was no response from the prosecutor. Mm. And there have been some others. We had a case not too long ago involving an individual who was employed at the Brookwood facility, for example, who used his vehicle and the vehicles of other employees, and in fact directed other employees to take scrap metal from the facility, sell it in another area, and then kept the money for himself. And this was a case that was presented to the district attorney, but it was never prosecuted. But it was also presented to the New York State Inspector General, and the Inspector mm-hmm. General herself gave a scathing report
really
of what this activity was, describing it as completely unethical, improper, and laying it right into the hands of the county prosecutor. But again, nothing was done about it. And there have been other instances of this as well. And this is not the kind of reputation that we should have in Columbia County. And it's not a way to build trust between our public officials and the residents of the county. So that's one of the things that I would hope to reinstill with people, is to let them know that there's not going to be any political favoritism as to who gets prosecuted and who doesn't. Mm-hmm. People are not going to be selectively sent to jail or set free, depending upon who they know or who they might be connected with. Mm-hmm. And that trust between the district attorney, law enforcement, and the courts is probably the most important thing that I'm looking to reestablish as the elected prosecutor for Columbia County.
And I think, if I could, there's another piece of information here. The district attorney, the powers and the duties of the district attorney are outlined in the New York State County law. And the district attorney has very broad discretion to determine how criminal cases will be prosecuted and can select which ones he prosecuted. So that's pretty much in the law. I mean, that's been found to be accurate. And there's another action that seems to be or has been taking effect over the last 4 years or so regarding the courts in the towns. And maybe Ken can address this and how he might change this. There seems to be a move towards centralizing the court system, and that taking some of the powers and the responsibilities away from the town courts and centralizing it and moving down into Hudson in the DA's office. Hmm. Ken, do you see it that way, or do you want to comment on it?
I do see it that way. I visited just about all of the town courts at one time or another, and what I have seen is that many cases are being removed from the local courts and taken to county courts, even misdemeanor cases, misdemeanor DWIs, and a whole host of other prosecutions that were handled by the local courts are now being sent up to county court. Mm. And the result of this has a lot of different consequences, both for the local towns and also for the people who are accused. If they go to county court, they're facing the possibility of an indictment by a grand jury, mm-hmm. for example.
Yeah.
And that's a very threatening thing for many people. Instead of having the opportunity to have their case heard by their local communities before a jury of their peers. So mm-hmm. that's one aspect of it. The other is that the towns are actually losing money because these cases, fines, whatever might be the sentence upon a plea or a conviction, are instead going elsewhere instead of going to the towns whose budgets often depend upon them. Mm-hmm. So that's another aspect of it, and it's simply the idea that now these local courts are losing their obligation to administer justice in their local communities, and that's why they were elected. State law requires that every town have at least two justices right now. If they don't have any cases in front of them, there's no money to support them, we're going to be losing those community courts. Mm-hmm. And that's a very serious matter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Ken, as you know, the district attorney will be regularly called upon to advise various law enforcement agencies throughout the state, throughout the county. And I know Ken has some ideas about what he wants to do, that how to redevelop or build relationships, reestablish some relationships with the county police agencies.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's very important to work closely with law enforcement to not only get their ideas about the way some of their investigations should be conducted, but also to let them know that they're there, they're elected, whether they're elected officials or appointed or hired, they're professionals. They're there to do the jobs that they've been trained to do, and that's the most important aspect of it, is not for them to sit back and wait to be told what to do, directed what to do, but to allow them to exercise their training as professionals in law enforcement, and to move out within the communities, talk to people, to find out what their concerns are, what their issues are, not to serve as somebody who just comes in and when there's a crime committed and takes somebody away, mm-hmm. but to see what things can be done for them. I think it would be important for law enforcement to work more closely with community activists and people who are representative mm-hmm. of their community to find out, again, what their concerns are and what issues need to be addressed. And as far as our local police agencies are concerned, they should also be allowed to do the jobs that they were allowed to do. In many cases, they've been restricted in what they can and cannot do, and that's simply not the way our criminal justice system should work.
Mm. Well, yeah, certainly they're the people on the ground, or at least in the car, and so they presumably know the community in which they work.
Exactly.
They may not live in that community, but they spend their workday in that community.
There's an interesting case I want to bring up, if I could, Deb,
okay.
if you don't mind, and like find some humor in this. It's a well-known case, and it involves a well-known figure from New York City, and it relates to restitution, because part of the district attorney's job is to also assist crime victims mm-hmm. with seeking restitution and meeting out those requirements. And there's a well-known case, and it happened in a Columbia County town that borders the river. And it involves a character out of New York City and a land dispute. And mm-hmm. it's been quoted in the paper by the district attorney that the settlement for this, the restitution, was a mere $350 regarding some removal of trees and vegetation from one property to the other. Mm-hmm. And, that was there was a disagreement among the two parties as to whether that was sufficient or not. And mm-hmm. so that's part of the DA's job also, is to assist
in restitution. Yeah, I'd like to go back to what you said just a few minutes ago, Peter, about you reminded us that any DA has broad powers to decide what to prosecute. Did I say that correctly?
That's correct. They yeah. are the determiner of what they prosecute, and that has been resolved recently in cases in Albany. I believe the case went to the Soares case, I believe it was, went to the Court of Appeals, I believe.
The Soares case would be the Albany County DA, or no?
He was the district attorney,
yeah.
and he decided not to prosecute. This was involving yeah. the case where they were in the park.
Mm-hmm. It was a protest, yeah.
Right, the protest.
Okay,
in the
and
park
he decided not to prosecute.
Decided not
it?
To prosecute,
yeah.
and the judge, tried to compel him to prosecute, and that case went on to the Court of Appeals, and I think it was decided such that the DA can. Am I seeing that wrong?
Well, it's yes. In a sense, there's no question the district attorney has the discretion as to whether to prosecute a certain case or how to prosecute a mm-hmm. certain case. But the distinction in that case involving Soares and the city court judge was that once the case gets in front of the judge, the district attorney has to do something. He can't just not do anything. He has to either make a motion to dismiss, or the
uh-huh.
defense
okay.
has to make a motion to uh-huh. dismiss. There has to be some sort of response rather than simply say, I'm not going to show up.
Right.
And that was the situation there. And the judge and that city court judge was trying to compel the district attorney to produce certain witnesses because the district attorney hadn't made that motion to dismiss.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do it. The district attorney can say, well, I'm going to move this, dismiss this in the interest of justice, or whatever his grounds might be.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't occur, so the Court of Appeals said, why is this case even before us?
Right.
We don't understand why this dispute should occur mm-hmm. when once a case is in front of a judge and the DA decides not to prosecute it, all he has to do is say, okay, I move to dismiss this case in the interest of justice, or because it doesn't serve the compelling public interest, or whatever. That wasn't done, and that's why that case went up to the Court of Appeals.
But it just shows the broad discretion.
Yeah,
that
exactly. And is the bringing it back to Columbia County, is the idea here that the DA has been making motions to dismiss in cases that people think should have been prosecuted?
Now, we don't have a record of all of those cases because
right.
in many situations the public doesn't have access to
uh-huh.
it,
yeah.
But in some cases there hasn't been a motion to dismiss. The
oh.
case has simply been dropped. even
but
even
that
before
the court
it gets,
of appeal. Oh, it's been dropped before it gets before a judge.
Even after it gets to the judge, that's what happened in this case involving the sexual abuse of a 14-year-old boy. Was that there was no action by the part of the district attorney to dismiss it or to let the court know that they weren't able to proceed for whatever reason. So the court took it upon himself in that case to say, well, I'm going to dismiss this because there's no other way
so
to get rid of it.
He could,
So he did that on his own.
Right. And I think the point of all this that I see that I'm trying to make is this what gives people the perception of justice not being applied evenly.
I think that's exactly
that's
right.
That's the point.
That's what we've been hearing when we were walking around talking to people. That's exactly what we're hearing, that it's not being applied fairly. And why do some people get these harsh sentences and others you don't even hear about? And that is one of the difficulties in trying to understand how many cases and what cases are dismissed, because once they're dismissed by the DA, the record is sealed.
Right.
There is no record. And, we're aware that goes on.
Okay. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Okay. If it's dismissed by the DA, the record is sealed.
Well, in some cases, in other cases, it would simply not be a record of
it does
of
not exist, yeah, right? The record does not exist.
It does not exist.
There's no answer, no record found or something to that effect.
Okay. Yeah, well, we've got a few more minutes here, Ken. I know. Let's go back to drug abuse. Recently the DA sent us all a letter. I got one. I know Peter and Ken got one, too. So, and we're all Democrats, so we figure everybody got one. And it talked about his concern with drugs in the county. Ken then replied to that through a My View in the Register Star that was published yesterday, Tuesday, if you want to go look at that. But I'd like Ken to talk about that a little bit.
Well, I think it was important to speak out on the issue because in the letter that went out to the public, to the residents of Columbia County, the DA said that this is one of the most serious issues that I've seen in 34 years of public life. He was elected in 2011, began serving January 2012, and I just was curious, and many people said to me, well, why is he just bringing this up now, 5 weeks before the election?
Why indeed?
When he's had 4 years to worry about it. If it was the most serious case and involved sales of heroin and heroin addiction in 2012, why wasn't something done about it then? And what we saw from the records that were on his official website is that there have been almost no convictions, prosecutions for criminal sales of heroin or any other narcotics in the years since he's been district attorney. Something like four in 2012, and then there was a big drug bust in 2013 that resulted in a number of convictions. But then again in 2014, went down to just a handful, and then actually none in 2015. So if this is an ongoing problem, and it is an ongoing problem, that has to be addressed on multiple fronts, involving not just getting the narcotics sellers off the streets, but treating the problems of heroin and drug addiction, then we need to be working at it continuously, and we need to work collaboratively with our law enforcement, with our drug treatment agencies, and with all of the counseling services that are available throughout the county to treat the problem. It's not something that you can just look at when election time comes around and say, well, this is what I'm doing now. It needs to be addressed continuously, and it needs to be addressed on many, many fronts. And what people have told me, what I have seen, is that simply hasn't been the case the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we can't read his mind, but why would there be so few efforts at prosecution? Were the cases not prosecutable?
I don't have an answer for that.
Right.
We simply don't know.
We only know what happened and didn't happen.
One of the things that I've seen in the last few years is that there has been, I hate to use the word lack of transparency, but certainly not a lot of outreach to the public in terms of what the DA's office is doing on a lot of issues.
Mm-hmm.
The last time he sent a letter to the public, I think, was in 2013, mm-hmm. telling people what he intended to do and so on. But we haven't seen anything since then. And even at one point there were records available on the website that showed how many arrests there had been made.
Mm-hmm.
But then those seem to have disappeared in 2015. For some reason.
Those went off the website? You can't
completely
find them now?
Can't find them.
Interesting.
There's nothing there.
Oh.
So these are things that I think are important. I think it's important for the public to know, not necessarily what ongoing investigations we have. That's something that the DA and the law enforcement have to work on behind closed doors.
Yeah, in privacy. Right, yeah.
Because they can't disclose what their operations are.
Right.
But we need to know what issues are being addressed, whether it's drug sales, drug addiction, gun violence, domestic violence, all of these things, juvenile justice, what's happening with our teens, and that's not being done. We have essentially no information about what programs are being undertaken, what initiatives are undertaken, and what outcomes we're looking to get.
Right. Well, that's a lack. And I'd also just like to tell people that Ken Golden, who's running for Columbia County DA, has a website if you would like more information. It's goldenforda.com. That's GOLDEN4DA.com. So you can find out more about Ken there. I don't know. I think we're almost about to go off the air. Do you want to say one more thing?
Please. If you don't mind.
Go ahead.
Just in regards to the district attorney, being a district attorney takes hard work, dedication, sound investigative work. And the fight against crime will always be a struggle. And I believe Ken Golden will help provide a fair and consistent system of justice and make Columbia County a safe place to live, work, and raise a family.
Great. Thank you, Peter. We have one more minute. Well, thank you both for coming. This is Debbie Mayer on At Issue. We've been talking to Ken Golden, who's running for DA in Columbia County, and to Peter Bujano, who's chair of the Columbia County Democratic Committee and, follows this stuff even more than I do. So it's been great to have you both here.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Now I think we're almost done. Hey, I'm on in 2 weeks, and I'm going to have some supervisor candidates for you because we have some close races in Columbia County in a couple of big towns for supervisor. So I'm hoping to talk to those people in 2 weeks.